standing on her own in the kitchen, before she had much vocabulary. She handed me her squeaky toy, and I received her gift, and I, smiling, said, "Thank you." And her face just lit up. And I handed the toy back to her, and I said, "For you." And her eyes lit up more. And smiling, she gave it back to me. And I said, "Thank you again." And she smiled even bigger and gave it back. And I gave it back to her, and she gave it back to me. And backwards and forwards, on and on we went, giving and receiving. The game of it, the joy of it, the simple human action of giving and receiving. It's one of the most important, simplest, and most profound of our human interactions. I give, you receive. You give, I receive. So I will be talking about giving and receiving today. Giving, receiving as a human fundamental interaction, as a spiritual practice, as an act of reciprocal generosity, as a response to love, as an act of responsibility, and as a dangerous, revolutionary commitment. If we go back in history merely 200 years or so in the Pacific Northwest, we find ourselves in the First Nations cultures of Bellakoula, Coast Salish, Nootka, Tsimshian, Tlingit, Haida, Kwakiutl, and Kikite First Nations. Kikite, also known as the New Westminster Indian Band, who farmed and fished and hunted along the banks of the Fraser, just a stone's throw from where we are sitting today. In Aboriginal communities like the Kikite, before the Europeans arrived, there was a tradition of giving and receiving called the potlatch. And I'm confident that everyone here probably knows what I'm talking about. The word potlatch comes from the Chinook language, meaning to give away or gift. This festival or celebration was a vital part of the Aboriginal cultures of the Pacific Northwest. A potlatch was when a host family would offer hospitality to their guests with feasting, housing, entertainment, and giving away or gifting of their wealth. The main purpose of the potlatch was the redistribution or the reciprocity of wealth. The wealth could be physical things such as storable foods, canoes, blankets, but the wealth could also be in the songs and the dances and the religious rituals created by the family. These sacred ceremonies with great feasting and rituals were used to tell the story of the tribe and to situate that family story in the stories of creation. To host a potlatch was an incredible honor. It was an honor to give away the bounties that the earth and the sea provided. It was an honor to give away the works of art, the clothing, the canoes, the blankets that had been created by family members. It was an honor to tell the stories of one's family in dance and ritual. To host a potlatch was to acquire status among the clans. Through the ritual of giving, the clan family redistributed the abundance that they were given by nature and through their hard work. Giving strengthened the entire community. When the white Europeans arrived, they were offended by these ceremonies. It didn't make any sense from their cultural perspective. Europeans defined wealth as how much one person could accumulate. Or today we would say, in the end, the winner is the person who has the most toys. Which, frankly, shouts how self-centered and vacuous this point of view is. The 19th century Europeans, when faced with the foreign native culture where giving away was wealth, was the definition of status, well, they kind of freaked out. And they made it illegal to have potlatches. A culture that revered family, that had created a system of respectful responsibility to the whole of society, a culture based on an understanding that our wealth comes from the earth and that each of us is more potent, more integral to the whole by how we give back to the world than how we hold on to our own pots of wealth. This is the culture that was made illegal. Illegal to express gratitude. It became illegal to redistribute wealth through giving. It became illegal to practice a religion of generosity. You know, I have a hard time getting my mind around that. It seems so counterintuitive to the values that I hold and that I think many of you hold as well. Yet I'm not that naive to think that we are here today because our ancestors came to this land and, for better or for worse, imported those values and cultures. And that being said, I don't have to agree or accept the values of my ancestors nor of my culture. I can question them. We can question and think deeply on what is important to us. And we can choose to live our lives from different values. And yet, I have a fear. I fear even with our understanding today of the importance of generosity as a core spiritual value in our lives, I fear that because of the society that we are immersed in, that there is a depth and profundity of generosity and gift-giving and gift-receiving that is still beyond our understanding, because it is outside of our cultural knowledge or norm, which is why I'm intrigued by the concept of the potlatch. It makes me think of a story that my mom told me. She had gone to visit a friend of hers called Mariah Campbell. Mariah is a Métis writer, artist, and an activist who lives in Saskatchewan. When my mother arrived at Mariah's house, she was shown around the house. As Mariah did this, my mother would comment on what she saw, and she saw a painting, and like most people here, she said, "Oh, that's a lovely painting. I really like that painting." And no sooner had she said it that Mariah took it off the wall and gave it to her. This spontaneous act of giving so shocked my mom. She was afraid to comment on anything else in the house for fear that Mariah might give it to her. Now, I think that's interesting. Such a simple act, yet it holds immense power. What if someone gave you everything they had? What if you met someone whose capacity to give was limitless? That is powerful and scary for me. You know, something does a little short circuit in my brain. Is it fair to say that perhaps we who have grown up in a middle-class European culture feel afraid when people give to us? It raises so many questions for me. Now, my mother is not an ungenerous person. Far from it. Yet when I dig down into how I was raised and look at my own cultural impulses and norms, what I find is unconscious complications that are wrapped around giving and especially receiving. Now, I enjoy giving. I love making banana bread and feeding all the people around me, and they love it, and I feel good, and I enjoy driving my daughter to work or picking her up at the end of her shift. To be more specific, though, there is a part of me that is calculating when people give to me. There's this calculator in my head, right? The great balancing calculator of giving and receiving in my life. And I am most comfortable when I can give more than I receive. Then I'm free of this, weight of responsibility that I now owe somebody something when they give to me. It's the constant judging and calculating. Now, this self-revelation tells you something about my cultural background, but it also indicates that there is, in fact, a very potent power in giving and in receiving. I may misapply my fears to it, but that doesn't take away from the fact that unconsciously I recognize that there is a power, a deep power, in this action. Now, I think we have to take this power seriously and recognize it for what it is. Because it's been co-opted. It's been distorted by the consumer society that we live in. It's been taken away from our simple, profound hands and given to in this impersonal, self-centered, product-driven process. And it's taken over. It's been taken over. It's been renamed in this other image and meaning of giving and receiving. And we need to reclaim our own power to define what is ours to give and ours to receive. This is the dangerous revolutionary act that I mentioned earlier. Now, our youth would say, you got to unplug from the machine, right? And maybe we said that ourselves at one point, and maybe we still say it to ourselves. We are empowered to receive and give. These acts are inseparable when we live in balance with the world. Giving generates only a little personal power on its own. But when a gift is given and fully received, then it creates a much greater power. One Christmas, about 15 years ago or so, I had gone over to my dear friend Sheila's house. It was just before Christmas, probably maybe even Christmas Eve. Now, we'd known each other for about 5 years at that point, and we both had children about the same age, around 7 and 5. We both had non-functioning partners, and neither of us had any money, or very little. But we got by. It was okay. But I was deeply shocked when I went to get something out of her fridge to see that the fridge was completely empty. And it was Christmas. Well, I did what any of us would have done. I went to the store, I bought some groceries, and I brought it back to her. But what I remember most was her gracious receiving of that gift. You see, there was a great deal of risk in the giving. I could have misread her need. Maybe she was about to go shopping. She could have felt embarrassed or ashamed for me to know that her fridge was empty. She could have made me feel like I had stepped over some line in our relationship. She could have taken the gift but felt so much shame that there was no joy for her in the receiving, no gratitude for the receiving. So in this story, my giving was based on my love for my friend. It was the deep worth I attributed to our friendship that motivated the giving. The fact that she was able to receive my gift with such open-hearted, I don't know what else to say, such open-heartedness deepened my experience of giving to her a thousandfold. We were both empowered through that reciprocity of the action, and we were, in that moment, in right relationship with each other. Now, when I consider giving to my faith community, I calculate based on what is reasonable, based on my income, my lifestyle, the expenses I have. But perhaps there's another way to approach this. Perhaps calculated giving is a rational, socially acceptable way. Perhaps my thinking is embedded in a cultural perspective that only I barely see. What if we took a page out of the native tradition of potlatch and considered giving as a way to live in right relationship with the earth and with each other? Perhaps we ought to start with giving as a first response to being alive and living on this earth. Perhaps giving is connected to and perhaps equal to what we receive from the earth. What if our experience of wealth was based on what we gave back as opposed to what we accumulate? Now, I'm considering different possible impulses for giving, and I'm not meaning to advocate one way or another. I'm just wondering if we take for granted that we really do understand giving and receiving. One thing I'm sure of is that giving and receiving is not about things. It's about relationship. When we consider giving and receiving of ourselves, then we have entered the world of limitless possibilities, and that is powerful. Limitless power. It is this limitless power, this generosity of self, that has turned a collection of people into a community. It is this power that has created this Beacon community. By definition, Unitarians cannot be who we are, standing alone, in isolation. It just doesn't work. We need each other in order to practice our faith. Even as individuals, we still need each other. While we may engage our spirituality as individuals, the basis of that spirituality is formed in our coming together in the very first place. As Reverend Dana Greeley, the first president of the Unitarian Universalist Association, noted, "There is a stage in human development when people begin to be as much interested in others as in themselves, as much concerned with others' lots as their own. When this stage of development is reached by some miraculous transition, the word we, expressive of sympathy and of the sense of togetherness in life, takes the place of the word I. The word we unites us. Without my relationships, I would be nothing. The we, that is our religious community, is not just a higher stage of human development, though. It is the very means by which we live our faith, are sustained and nurtured by it, and by which we are able to transform ourselves, those around us, and our very world. And this transformation is just what we covenant to promote and affirm in the principles that bind us one to another. This church would not be here today without the simple human actions of giving and receiving. It takes place every time we come together. Many of you arrived here this morning to take out the banner and the clapboard that reads Beacon Unitarian Church. Someone sets up the chairs, or this morning many people were setting up chairs. Taking out the brochures and putting up the seven principles. Others come early to prepare the children's program to set up their space and lay out the spirit play materials. And someone else gets the coughing going and pulls out the tables and the microphones are set up and the piano is warmed up. And this morning the choir came to practice. And I know that this is not all we do as a community. Of course, there's meetings in people's houses. There's the Lunch Bunch, the Humanist Group, the Care and Connection Committee, thinking about members who are sick or in difficult situations. The Worship Committee, planning these wonderful services week after week. The board, working hard to manage the business of Beacon, monitoring the long-term goals and the plans for the future. And there's the outreach that you do too, working at the food bank, and your lay chaplain and chaplains offering high-quality services, memorials and weddings to the greater community. And I know some of you are connected to the regions, too. I've seen you at regional gatherings. And I know you organized and made happen one of the best regional gatherings ever. Some of you may even sit on national committees and attend CUC conferences. This is a community that practices its values. This is a congregation, a church, where faith is put into action, where the values spoken of are the values lived. Now, of course, we need to live within our means. We need to be clear and honest with ourselves. We need to be in right relationship with ourselves. If we're stressed and have no time, then to offer to drive across town to deliver a parcel will not create more energy. It will deplete the little energy we may have. If we have $20, then giving $25 means that we are living beyond our ability and not living in right relationships with ourselves. We give to Beacon our time, our talent, and our treasure as we have it to give. Period. To live in right relations with this community, we need to do two things. We must live in right relationship with ourselves first. And we are required to fully receive the gifts that Beacon has to offer us. Okay? From Beacon, we receive the gift of spiritual nourishment, the gift of care and solace in times of need, the gifts of friendship and companionship, the gift of knowing that we are not alone in this world and that there are others whose values are similar to ours, the gift of knowing that we are not alone in the work of justice, the gift of knowing we are not alone in the slow transformation of our world and that we are not alone in our application of reason to that mysterious human journey that we are all on. These are just some of the rich gifts that we receive from Beacon. We have a great deal of wealth among us. As in the First Nations concept of potlatch, our ability to give away our wealth includes our labors of hand and heart, our time and our money. So consider deeply what this community means to you today. Consider the wealth you have and how much you will give to this beloved community, that we may together strive to build a world where all human beings know that they are safe to be themselves, to be loved and cherished, and treated with respect and dignity. And thank you for the gift of being able to serve you.